take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
CannabisRadio.com presents The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Hey, this is great, man. Well, on the
earth. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and toke cats and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Wednesday, June 15th, 2016, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. And before we get too deep into today's show, my goodness, I was up last night working late as I usually do, writing and researching, and what comes across CNN but yet another horrific story from Orlando where a two-year-old child wanders wading around in a lagoon in a Disney World resort and gets taken off by an alligator, and they found the remains now. The boy was drowned, and the father had to fight off the saw his boy getting taken away and jumped in and tried to fight an alligator. My God. We first had that the singer from The Voice got shot at her concert, and then we had of course the horrific mass shooting at the Pulse nightclub, and now gators snatching kids. My God. what a terrible run of events for the people of Orlando and the families, of course, that are, you know, mourning all of this. It's just indescribable, hard to imagine that much tragedy in one place at one time. But my heart goes out to the people of Orlando. I was just there two months ago at the Gaylord Palms Resort in that area. And so, guys, just what a shame. All right, well, let's get on to today's show. We've got our guest for our Hemp Day Hump Day update joining us, the organic cowboy himself, Doug Fine, author of Hemp Bound and Too High to Fail. We got some updates on hemp, including a bill in Rhode Island for hemp growing that got a favorable improvement. So we'll talk about that and more. Also, the Alex Whiteplume situation. We'll get an update on what's going on with the Lakota Sioux activist who's now allowed to grow hemp, I believe. So we'll find out everything that's going on with Doug. And he's assured me he's in range. he's ready and waiting for the call. We'll get him on the line today, I'm sure. So stay tuned for that coming up at half past. Also on the show today, we'll have time for a radical rant where I demand that we free Roger Christie. I know a lot of people that listen to me, especially the more religious bent, know my feelings on religion and all of that, but the upholding of his sentence today by the U.S. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals is sad and unnecessary, and the man should just be freed. He's not a threat to anybody. He's not a criminal. We'll talk about that coming up in the Radical Rant. Also on the show today, in drug war data mining, we're going to take a look at ignoring the realities of this opioid crisis that we have in America. First of all, trying to trace where that crisis originated from. And second of all, why some of the people addressing this crisis can't see the obvious need to legalize marijuana to give people another option to deal with pain in this country. We'll talk about that coming up in the Drug War Data Mines. Also on the show, behind the headlines, we mentioned we'd talk about this yesterday. There's three initiatives in Arkansas we talked about yesterday. Today, we take a look behind the headlines at three initiatives in Montana. One good, one great, one pretty evil. So all that's coming up right after this first break. We'll get to the Cannabis Radio News. We've got those headlines from Hawaii, an NFL headline for you, some Montana news, ACLU endorsement, some news from Phoenix, and the MPP makes a presidential endorsement. All that coming up, plus an hour or two. Toker Talk Radio will take your calls at 971-533-7111. Thanks for joining us live from beautiful legal Potland, Oregon. I'm Radical Russ. Stay tuned. We're back in 2 minutes.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
From From dabs to chivas, sativas to indicas, we roll out a whole concentrate of fresh new content every week. It's like going from the greenhouse to the dispensary. CannabisRadio.com.
The cannabis business industry is growing. Business is booming. And as new opportunities arise in newly legalized states, each market is getting more competitive. Today, it takes more than just being a good grower. Do you have the resources to market and handle this ever-changing business landscape? Let Canna Management Corporation help you grow your canna business with our vast resources and experience to make your business a fully functional service company. Financial management, HR, sales, marketing, efficiency, and more. CMC has the experience and the expertise to improve your business and help you better meet the demands of your clients and customers. Call Canna Management Corporation and let our team get you ready to grow. 415-269-8015. That's 415-269-8015. Or visit canna-management.com.
We love the earth.
I'm Radical Russ Belville, inviting you to join me every weekday on CannabisRadio.com for the Russ Belville Show. It's the NPR of POT. We bring you the latest marijuana headlines, cannabis business analysis, drug war data, activist interviews, radical rants, and your live calls. Join me every weekday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, live only on CannabisRadio.com.
Marijuana is not addictive, but listening to the Russ Belville Show is.
Get Dot Buzz. Dot Buzz is the internet platform that fuels community interest, excitement, and new experiences. Dot Buzz is the premier online destination for internet users seeking the latest news on a variety of topics. Dot Buzz appeals to groups active in blogging, communications, journalism, advertising, and marketing. Dot Buzz offers registrants a stronger alternative to the shrinking namespace of existing top-level domain names, such as .com, .net, and .org. Get your name now at get.buzz.
It's time for the Cannabis Radio News. Covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Cannabis Radio News is now available exclusively at CannabisRadio.com. Now your marijuana headlines in 4 minutes and 20 seconds. This is Cannabis Radio News.
This is your Cannabis Radio News for Wednesday, June 15th, 2016. Honolulu, Hawaii. A federal appeals court is upholding the convictions of two Hawaii cannabis ministry leaders found guilty of having 300 pot plants as part of a distribution ring. Roger Christie and his wife Sherry Ann Christie appealed their convictions on religious grounds, saying their ministry used marijuana as a sacrament. Tuesday's ruling by the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals found the federal government had a compelling interest in preventing marijuana from being diverted to non-members and being provided to minors. The ruling noted the government may force a religious objector to comply with the law if doing so furthers a compelling government interest and there isn't a less restrictive way to accomplish that goal. Baltimore, Maryland, Eugene Monroe, the NFL offensive tackle, has been released into free agency by the Baltimore Ravens, a move Monroe believes is due to his advocacy for medical marijuana. Monroe had donated $80,000 toward research for medical marijuana use in the treatment of concussions and traumatic brain injuries. The NFL recently settled a multi-million dollar lawsuit by former players who contend the NFL didn't do enough to protect its players from the lifelong consequences of concussion. With many players becoming addicted to powerful painkillers, Monroe advocates for the removal of cannabis as a banned substance for NFL players so they could use it for pain relief instead. ESPN NFL insider Adam Schefter reports that Monroe could end up with the New York Giants, the San Diego Chargers, or maybe the Seattle Seahawks, who play where marijuana is legal. Helena, Montana. The Montana Cannabis Industry Association is asking the state Supreme Court to further delay enforcement of stringent new medical marijuana restrictions that are supposed to go into effect August 31st. The association on Tuesday asked the court for a stay until the U.S. Supreme Court takes action on an appeal or until the November election, when a proposed initiative expanding access to medicinal marijuana could be decided by Montana voters. Backers say they have collected enough signatures needed to place the measure on the ballot. In February, the state court ruled in favor of provisions of a 2011 state law that limited medical marijuana providers to selling the drug to a maximum of 3 patients. The court agreed to delay enforcement until August, but the Cannabis Association last month asked the federal high court to reverse the state court's ruling. Los Angeles, California, the California chapter of the American Civil Liberties Union has endorsed the Adult Use of Marijuana Act. Passage of the AUMA would legalize the possession of an ounce of marijuana and the cultivation of 6 cannabis plants. Citing the racial disparities in ticketing and arrests that still occur, despite a decriminalization law passed in 2010, Margaret Dooley Samuley, the criminal justice and drug policy director with the ACLU of California, said, quote, "It is time to move from prohibition to regulation," end quote. From 2011 to 2014, the California ACLU found that there were roughly 60,000 marijuana arrests. Those arrests were over 70% young people and over 70% people of color. Phoenix, Arizona. The public electric utility in Arizona has made a $10,000 donation to a group fighting the legalization of marijuana. KJZZ Radio reports that Arizona Public Service spokesperson Jim McDonald warns about the possibility of stoned employees affecting, quote, "the public safety aspects involved in providing reliable electric service," end quote. McDonald denies any customer money was included, saying the $10,000 came only from, quote, "shareholder funds," end quote. The anti-marijuana group is known as Arizonans for Responsible Drug Policy and is vice-chaired by Yavapai County Attorney Sheila Polk and has so far raised about $480,000. The ballot initiative to legalize marijuana in Arizona specifically protects the right of employers to maintain so-called drug-free workplaces. Washington, D.C. The Marijuana Policy Project, the D.C.-based reform group, has officially endorsed Libertarian Gary Johnson for President of the United States. MPP was quick to note that the endorsement is based solely on Johnson's A-plus rating on the issue of marijuana reform and not based on any of Johnson's other policy proposals. This has been your Cannabis Radio News for Wednesday, June 15th, 2016. I'm Russ Belville.
Legal to listen to all over the world.
We're just not sure about France.
CannabisRadio.com.
Dr. Dabber, hurry! Its temperature is shooting past 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit. It's burning up.
I'm afraid for this little guy, it's just too late.
What caused the problem?
Only Dr. Dabber can maintain the perfect temperature for a smooth-tasting, slower burn. This standard vaporizer lost all of its health benefits, sending it up in smoke.
So you're telling me that most vapor pens burn so hot they produce smoke, not vapor?
Correct! Keep away from those standard vaporizer pens and turn to Dr. Dabber. Doctor's orders.
Less heat? More flavor.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 1920s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
They're bringing drugs, they're bringing crime, they're rapists, and some, I assume, are good people.
Okay, maybe you're high, too.
The Russ Belville Show is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest-growing business association in the fastest-growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com, and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details.
The world of cannabis is evolving at a frenetic pace. The Russ Belville Show gets behind the headlines to take a deeper look at breaking news in our Cannabis Focus.
Today in the Cannabis Focus, we want to take a look at Big Sky Country, the state of Montana, where there's just a few days left. I think it's this Monday where they have to turn in signatures for ballot initiatives. And there are 3 marijuana-related ballot initiatives in Montana. However, there's really only 2. There is one that's a ballot initiative that was put together by a group called Cycling for Sensible Drug Policy, started by a sports writer, and they've got an initiative called I-178, and that's an initiative for legalization of marijuana. He's only got about $6,700 in total contributions and only has $522 in the bank, and they don't have the 24,175 signatures they need. This, you know, it doesn't look like this one is going to make it. They're also promoting a constitutional amendment that needs about 50,000 signatures. So both, you know, statutory legalization and constitutional legalization, might as well do both at the same time, right? So that one doesn't look like it's going anywhere. The real battle that's going on in the state of Montana has to do with the I-176 initiative versus the I-182 initiative. And the I-176 is the scary one. This is the one to watch in 2016 that could have a devastating effect. There's a group called Safe Montana, and they're campaigning to just outright repeal medical marijuana. This is I-176 in Montana. It's run by a businessman named Steve Zabawa, and he says he's collected more than enough signatures to get on the ballot. And he says, quote, "We're the aggressive party, and that's kind of our attitude. The loud minority of marijuana users have been very, very loud and very effective in their campaign of, it's no worse than alcohol. Let's tax it and spend it," end quote. So he has put $70,000, almost $71,000 of his own money into the campaign so far and has enough money and enough signatures, it looks like, to make the ballot. The group has also gotten some small contributions from other businesses like Rimrock Auto Group, but he says, quote, "Less stoned people, that makes for a better community," end quote, and says that he worries about medical marijuana making it onto the recreational market, as if that was necessary for people in the recreational market to be smoking. Like this guy thinks he's going to get rid of medical marijuana, and then that'll take care of the marijuana problem. Nobody will ever smoke marijuana again. The magical thinking of these people just is unbelievable. The good amendment, or the good initiative out there in Montana, is I-182. This one is Montana Citizens for I-182. And what it does, you have to understand a little bit about the background of Montana. Montana passed its medical marijuana law in, I think it was 2004. And it was a good Western medical marijuana law. You could have home grow, you could have caregivers. Well, that evolved to eventually have dispensaries, as it is wont to do, because, you know, one caregiver gets noticed and starts helping 3, 4, 5, 10 people, and there's a need. If you can have far more patients in any medical marijuana program than you're going to have people that's growing weed and supplying them. So evolved these dispensaries, and kind of, again, on that tenuous caregiver idea, well, I'm not a store, I'm a caregiver with brick and mortar walls and a fixed location that people line up for to pick from a selection, but I'm not a store, I'm a caregiver, right? So that's all this murky semantic stuff. Well, the legislature in Montana outright repealed medical marijuana. They just outright repealed the whole thing. It was only saved by then Governor Brian Schweitzer's veto, right? So it just came a veto away from being repealed. So in the interim, after that, the legislature came up with this bill. I forget the number of it. Was it 423? I can't remember. But they came up with this bill that pretty much eviscerated all the loopholes. They made it so that a caregiver could only sell to 3 patients. So that made it impossible to have a storefront, and made some other changes. And so this got voted on in a referendum, and a referendum didn't get it overturned. There was a veto referendum, and it's confusing because you had to vote no to say yes. It was one of them weird situations. So we still, and the courts have upheld this bill that cut down the medical marijuana program. So this 182 would fix that. It would remove the restriction of 3 patients per provider. And it would take away the state review of doctors who recommend more than 25 people for medical marijuana. Basically, it would allow for dispensaries to come up and for the system to go back the way it was in Montana, which was working pretty well for patients.
That's just how white folks will do you.
You said it, Mr. President. All right, we got to take a break. It's 20 after in the mountain time zone, so happy 420 to our friends in the Rocky Mountain High. I'm going to take ourselves a short break. And when we come back, some drug war data mining on the opioid crisis when we return.
Being green is good. Growing green is good. Making green is great. CannabisRadio.com.
Great websites today need expert web design and development and need to be e-commerce ready and mobile friendly. But building a marketable and profitable website can be an uphill climb. Ready to make your new website or replace your existing website? Think Orange as the new way to get in the black. Orange Hill Development works with Fortune 500 companies and offer the same top quality development service at a fraction of what other providers charge. Brands like Absolute, Carlsberg, and Nestlé trust Orange Hill Development. Find out why you should trust your website with Orange Hill. Contact Orange Hill for a consultation today at orangehilldevelopment.com. It's time to Hemp Present.
With Inadina Stanger.
I say to you with all the fervor of my soul that God intended men to be free. Rebellion against tyranny is a righteous cause. And I believe that with every ounce of my soul, we are fighting a righteous cause because people need nature.
Marijuana! Hemp Presents, only on Cannabis Radio. Sweet sativa.
The Russ Belville Show, where the truth about marijuana gets more than a minute to speak.
With over 6 years of experience in the industry, New Era CPAs is one of the nation's leading cannabis accounting firms, helping hundreds of growers, dispensaries, and ancillary companies with their tax, legal, and business strategies. New Era CPAs offices cover the West Coast from Seattle to San Diego, and their skilled team is always available to help you take your business to the next level. Visit neweracpas.com for more info and set up a consultation. Welcome to the new era.
Promoting the end of adult cannabis prohibition is easy because we have facts, science, reason, compassion, evidence, truth, and logic on our side. It's even easier when researchers catalog it all for us. Learn how to gather the facts on marijuana use, arrests, seizures, rehabs, drug tests, and more on this edition of Drug War Data Mining.
Today in the Data Mines, we take a look at the opioid epidemic in America, and this was brought to my attention by an article on publicceo.com entitled, Prince's Death Adds to Opioid Epidemic's Devastating Toll, and Cities Are Determined to Fight Back. Well, that's laudable. Let's fight back against this opioid epidemic. We all miss Prince, and it begins by talking about Prince's death and that he was on fentanyl, which is an incredibly strong pain medication, highly addictive. They ask, should Prince have known better? Should his doctors have known better? What are the lessons to be learned from his unfortunate death? So they make some points. They say, one, to talk about the disease of drug addiction. Okay. To have drug take-back programs, right, where they buy back your unused pharmaceuticals. Well, okay, that sounds reasonable, sure. Naloxone, yeah, of course. Every first responder, every drug cab, if you're on any sort of opioid, naloxone should go with it. It should just be added to the prescription. You should just get naloxone. For those of you who don't know, it's the anti-opioid. It's the anti-venom for an overdose, right? It's anti-overdose drug. Prescription drug monitoring programs. Yeah, let's set up more databases to see who's taking what drugs. Okay, all right. Education and prevention, that's always a good idea. Although, clean syringe and needle exchange. Yeah, for people that are using injectable heroin and such, that's, clean needles, good idea. Yeah, drug courts. not so great with the drug court idea, especially when usually the people going to drug court, the only crime they've committed is being caught with the drug. So I got to kind of veto that one. But conspicuously absent from this list of things cities ought to do to help combat the opioid crisis, decriminalize marijuana. Legalize marijuana. Give people in pain something else to turn to. Give them an alternative. Whenever I hear about this opioid crisis, I always like to go back to the numbers and find out what exactly is it we're talking about. Currently, the opioid deaths that we have are national overdose deaths. This is from the National Institute on Drug Abuse, from the National Institutes on Health. Currently, there's about 43,000 people who die from overdose in America, about 43,000 a year. And 25,000 of those are people dying from prescription drugs. 17,000 are from illicit drugs, cocaine and heroin, right? So we've got more overdose deaths from the legal drugs, the prescription drugs. 25,000, over 25,000. Those who died from opioid pain relievers, 18,893. So there's more deaths from just the legal opioids than the illicit drugs, all of them, coke, meth, heroin, all combined. 18,893, almost 19,000 versus about 17,500 from the illicit drugs. And when you look at these numbers, those are numbers from 2014. And you can go back on this chart to 1999, when the number of overdoses from opioid pain relievers was about 4,000. It was about 4,000 in the 20th century, the end of the 20th century. We hit 2,000, it's 4,400. But from 2001 on, it just starts climbing, adding 1,000 or 2,000 every year to where we're at now, almost 19,000 opioid pain reliever deaths. There's another set of data that I like to look at when I talk about this, and that is the DEA's prescription drug monitoring program, not the prescription drug monitoring program, the office of, oh dang, I forgot the word, diversion, that's it, the Office of Diversion Control. The Office of Diversion Control of the DEA is in charge of maintaining quotas of how much of these powerful opioid drugs can be produced. Because this ain't pot. You don't just grow it. Not just anybody can make an OxyContin, okay? It requires factories and precursor chemicals, and it's not the kind of thing you do in your, even a backyard meth cook could handle, right? This is some high-level shit. So the amount of fentanyl that was produced in 1999, back when we had, you know, the 4,000 overdose deaths, was 269 tons. The amount produced in 2014, when we got up to the big 18,000, 19,000 number, is up to 2,100 tons. Oxycodone from 12,000 tons to 149,000 tons. Morphine from 12,000 tons to 62,000 tons. Vicodins from 13,000 tons to 99,000 tons. Dilaudid, 743 tons to 7,000 tons. Between 1996, when the beginning of the medical marijuana era in the United States of America, from 96 to 2016, there has been a 69,000% increase in oxymorphone, 2,400% increase in OxyContin, 400% increase in morphine, 1,000% increase in Dilaudid, 629% increase in Vicodin, 1,500% increase in fentanyl. As far as what the quotas are, what the companies are allowed to manufacture. Now, I promised after Monday's ranting that I wouldn't be talking about that other terrible epidemic that we've got in America, but there seems to be a parallel here. The more there is of something that can kill people, the more it seems to be killing people. All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll get on the line with our hemp expert, Doug Fine, the author of Too High to Fail and Hemp Bound. for our occasional update on what's happening in the world of industrial hemp from sea to shining sea. We're back in just 2 minutes.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Cannabis use isn't the only thing growing.
So are we.
Grow with us. CannabisRadio.com.
The cannabis industry is growing. Business is booming. And as new opportunities arise in newly legalized states, each market is getting more competitive. Today, it takes more than just being a good grower. Do you have the resources to market and handle this ever-changing business landscape? Let Canna Management Corporation help you grow your canna business with our vast resources and experience to make your business a fully functional service company. Financial management, HR, sales, marketing, efficiency, and more. CMC has the experience and the expertise to improve your business and help you better meet the demands of your clients and customers. Call Canna Management Corporation and let our team get you ready to grow. 415-269-8015. That's 415-269-8015. Or visit canna-management.com.
Warning. Hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they pay me to say that. A public service message from CannabisRadio.com and the Russ Belville Show.
When you are starting up a medical cannabis business, you want a fired-up lawyer who understands the needs of cannabis consumers. The Law Office of Lauren Vasquez is your fired-up lawyer for the cannabis industry. Visit her website, fireduplawyer.com, or call 1-855-MMJ-LAWS for more information. That's 855-665-5297 for Lauren Vasquez, your fired-up lawyer, or email fireduplawyer@gmail.com.
Marijuana legalization also ushers in the return of the American hemp industry. Get the latest news from the author of Hemp Bound and Too High to Fail, Doug Fine, in our Hemp Day Hump Day update.
All right, welcome back, everybody. 32 after the hour, time for our Hemp Day Hump Day update, and we are going to... We got him on the line. I just got to make sure that he can hear me okay. You got me, Doug?
Loud and clear from the hemp finish line, Russ. That's where we're coming from today.
What is the hemp finish line?
Well, since we're our last Hump Day segment, gosh, I don't even know where to begin. Three major things, but one of them is, I don't know if you can feel it in my voice.
Yeah.
It's one thing to follow hemp. It's one thing to witness hemp. It's one thing to document and report on hemp. It's one thing to know of its impact. It's another to be out there as the farmer supervising hemp planting, 23 acres in the soil in Vermont last week. It was the finish line, man. It's growing already. I've been tweeting the pictures of the sprouts like they're my kin.
That's great. So hemp farming in Vermont, 23 acres happening. That's some good news.
Yeah, so we've got Vermont, it turns out, with its inexpensive registration process and basically a hands-off, no help, no harm kind of attitude, it turns out this is the way to go, because if you're talking about expanding the program to the maximum under current federal and state law, because the U.S. supply of hemp, which is protected under federal law, including interstate interaction between approved hemp programs, that's explicitly permitted under hemp law thanks to a provision in a big spending bill last December. The U.S. supply is coming back so fast that all the hoops that have had to be jumped through for permits to import seed are becoming less and less vital. I'm an eternal optimist, Russ, and it's coming back faster, and it's because it's needed and the markets are there, and it's magnificent to watch. And so Vermont basically has a hands-off policy, and that's what's allowed it to thrive. We've got a farmers co-op going. There are three families involved, and we worked our butts off for a week. Every picture, if you look at Organic Cowboy on Twitter, every picture I'm beaming. I'm happy to be out there in the hot sun lifting rocks and running this disker in a hot Vermont spring day.
That's wonderful. We love hearing those stories, and I have been checking out your Twitter feed and seeing some of those pictures, so it does look like you're having a lot of fun. And as far as New England area hemp farming goes, I saw a blurb about Rhode Island making a change. They were going to legalize hemp just for some tribes, and now they're going to open up for everybody. Did you catch that?
Man, you know, this just goes to show, A, how fast hemp is moving, and B, what it's like to now, after Vermont, to be working on hemp on Maui, which is, you know, it's not just a physical island, it's a news island. But even this past week in Maui, which we haven't talked about, for Hemp History Week, really fun time there, really fast forward development on hemp in Hawaii. What did filter through to me were changes in North Carolina. North Carolina's making a mistake. I'm sure they have their own reasons, restricting hemp acreage, opposite of the way to go, in their program. And what was the other states I've been hearing about? I just got a big hug from my 6-year-old son. He just checked my train of thought. But I did not hear about the Rhode Island situation. But Maui was a fantastic time because they are focused on that island on food and energy independence. So my message fits right in with the most traditional and the most progressive thinkers on that island, and we got fired up this past week.
All right. And just the other day, yesterday, I had a guest on the show, Bruce Dietzen, who was with the Hempsters Cannabis Car Tour. We got to talk a little bit about Henry Ford and the old cannabis car. And I'm wondering if you have any other updates as far as, you know, the uses of hemp or some of the developments that are happening for, you know, technologically.
Sure. Yeah. You know, we've had fun in the past here on Hump Day, Hemp Day, talking about the plastic that's already being made, the petroleum-free plastic, the incredible supercapacitor research results for hemp fibers. I can't emphasize enough how much these next generation technologies are going to work. But I've really, this last week, been really in touch with the soil. What Hawaii needs is healing from a century and a half of monoculture, often sugarcane monoculture, but some others as well. And that before picture that I'm seeing there is soil like bowling walls, hard, compacting over all these years. And then the recovery of people who are starting to rebuild the soil that allowed the food forest to thrive during the pre-Western times on these same hills. There's illustrations and even early photographs of some of these lands still thriving and functioning with native plants. And speaking to farmers about working hemp into that really has me thinking about soil, because when you see what happens in the tropics, how quickly everything wants to grow, and it's just unbelievable. Like producing papaya trees that volunteered 2 years earlier, how much everything wants to grow there, then to have the message impressed that don't even look at what's happening above the ground. It's all about what's happening in those first 7 inches of topsoil. That's really gotten me back to the other side. It's all part of the same story. But while I'm normally thinking about next generation apps, right now I'm thinking about rebuilding soil and the value of that beyond getting the best quality hemp products for those next generation apps. It also is about sequestering carbon and mitigating climate change, which is important for the species survival. And the way that picture just completely goes together and farmers the world over get it now, that's really just the magic of what I've been thinking about the last week.
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of that development and a lot of that awareness that is growing with the adoption of industrial hemp. And now more and more legislators around the country that seem to get it, where before they would always try to hide behind, you know, oh, it's too much like marijuana, we won't be able to tell the difference. They don't even bring up those silly arguments anymore, do they?
I think less and less. I wish somebody would with me so I can say, and your problem with zero deaths ever psychoactive cannabis compared to alcohol is,
yeah, really.
I'd say it's all one plant and it's all great. It's all, have you not seen, I mean, Hickenlooper, as we know, in Colorado, I'm sure, Russ, you've probably covered this at length. I mean, you have this initial a politician who says what he or she thinks is going to, you know, most appeal to the most important voting segment at that moment, right? So you had nothing but resistance to the will of the people, to a dang constitutional amendment from the governor. And he's changed his tune. He's seeing the lowest unemployment in the nation.
Yeah.
He's seeing shut down, shuttered Pueblo reopening with cannabis processing. And he's like, you know what? This rocks. And so anybody who's pretending it doesn't, they're living that, like, they're leaving last century, and they're welcome to catch up, you know.
Now, as we move forward with more legalization, everybody's looking at the state of California for 2016 and passing Adult Use of Marijuana Act. And do you worry about legal marijuana crowding out the interest in wanting to grow hemp, that there might be more money in legal buds and less in legal stocks?
No, I don't see a division. It's all the same to me.
Well, there's only so much land, though, is what I'm saying. Is that, like, as they choose, as you know, farmers are choosing what to go into. Would they choose, you know, psychoactive cannabis over industrial hemp to the detriment of developing hemp in California?
I tell you, in the other legalization states, there's no shortage of people that want to cultivate hemp. Colorado is increasing 1,000% in acreage per year. I'm just astounded. There's that multi-thousand acre farm, single farms of growing thousands of acres this year. They can't keep up with it. I just did an interview with their Department of Ag head. Can't keep up with the application process. Same growth. We're seeing basically 1,000% growth everywhere, okay, annually for hemp. So to me, it does all work. And I really, but honestly, I'm glad you asked the question, Russ, because for me, I like to look at, you know, the past the true finish line of the end of complete end of cannabis prohibition. To me, the cannabis plant will just have one name of cannabis. It'll be cultivated like any other crop, you know, like chickpeas or tomatoes. And for the percentage of cultivation that involves a finished product and only a finished product that might have psychoactivity, it's just similar to the way beer alcohol is sold, no big deal. But for the rest of the plant, similar to, let's say, the wheat that goes into beer, it would be just, you know, like absolutely in your grocery store, produce aisle, cannabis flowers for nutritive whatever, and plus value-added products. That's already coming. You already see CBD oils and flowers just in a grocery store in places like Luxembourg. But I don't think we're going to be delineating between hemp and other kinds of cannabis very soon. People are going to be cultivating for based on what the application and final market is.
And that's, you know, we're seeing a development in the hemp side of things with what you mentioned, those CBD oils and the idea of growing industrial hemp crops for extraction of CBD. How is that going to shape the market?
It's a good question, because in the projects I'm involved in, Vermont, Oregon, and now Hawaii, I like the idea of growing for flower, especially when you're local. If you're growing something, a fantastic local cultivar that's going to just be available at the farmer's market or grocery store regionally or locally, be the best, and you're always going to have a market. That's true for psychoactive or non-psychoactive. But in terms of hemp farmers that see the real value of growing, basically growing psychoactive style, but just a plant that when processed has less than 0.3% THC, and thus is technically today absurdly defined as hemp, you know, I advise people not to put all eggs in one basket, because you never know what or if the saturation point is for straight up CBD. I really think beyond just one cannabinoid and my own kind of planning and marketing for the projects in which I'm involved, but because we don't know the future and this is all so new, there's not really a downside to diversifying. And so let's, for instance, in the Vermont planting I was telling you about, we planted some at nice flower spacing and some at seed spacing. And as we research what the value-added potentials are for products that we create our own and or potential wholesale markets for various kinds of cannabinoids, we may wind up thinning some of the more tightly placed seed acreage if we see more value in allowing the space for flower production. So it's just a question of watching, and, you know, this is one of the fun things about hemp is, like, there's no department you can let go of paying attention to, from agronomic to marketing to legal to political to everything. But the good news is the undeniable sense that we're there and we've won. It's hemp is a major hemp cannabis is a major part of the future of American agriculture. We all know it.
Yeah, and getting to talk to the hempster car tour people, it was interesting to learn that Henry Ford's 1941 hemp car was like four or six times greener than a current, you know, hybrid type car. And then to think we could make cars with hemp body parts and eventually the batteries, you know, that hemp battery technology we're talking about, we could have our cars running completely on hemp. All right. That's Doug Fine. Somehow we've dropped our call with Doug, so we've got to call it a show. I think, yeah, a segment, I should say. Very interesting. I think my Skype account just short-circuited on me. Okay, well, we'll get that fixed for tomorrow's show. My apologies to Doug for the abrupt cutoff, but that's the way it goes sometimes. We're doing it live. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, free Roger Christie and the rest of us while you're at it.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
We don't limit how much you smoke, and we don't limit where you listen. Cannabis Radio is now on iTunes, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio.
It's time for Cannabis Facts about Teen Drug Use from Robert Platschorn's thesilvertour.org. This message is supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com. A recent survey by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control indicates that in states that have legalized medical marijuana, the rate of marijuana consumption among high school students has not increased. In fact, in legal states like Colorado, teen use has actually decreased significantly. It's simply no longer a big deal for teenagers in legal states. This was Cannabis Facts from thesilvertour.org, an educational nonprofit supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com.
The National Cannabis Industry Association presents the third annual Cannabis Business Summit and Expo. The most influential business event in the marijuana industry returns for 3 days in Oakland, California. Join your fellow industry leaders and policy influencers June 20th through 22nd for an in-depth educational experience and network with more than 3,000 cannabis professionals. The 2016 Cannabis Business Summit and Expo will feature keynote presentations from California Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom and NUMMI Organic Tea CEO Ahmed Rahim, giving you insight into cutting-edge policy discussions and the most innovative business practices. All this, plus the most comprehensive expo floor in the industry. The Cannabis Business Summit and Expo, June 20th through 22nd in Oakland. Don't miss out. Register right now at CannabisBusinessSummit.com and save 15% off registration using promo code RADIO15. That's CannabisBusinessSummit.com, promo code RADIO15.
CannabisRadio.com keeps you in the know Monday through Friday on air and on demand with Cannabis Radio News, presented with the definitive worldwide news source, the Associated Press. Stay informed with exclusive news on all things cannabis. Cannabis Radio News, live weeknights at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific, during the Russ Belville Show, or download the daily podcast exclusively on CannabisRadio.com, as well as iTunes, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio. When breaking news happens in the cannabis industry, Cannabis Radio News delivers the details first.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
The Supreme Court is wrong on the Second Amendment.
Okay, maybe you're high too.
Coming soon to a city near you, Cannabis Finance Bootcamp. Get all your cannabis accounting, legal, and compliance questions answered by their knowledgeable panel of industry experts who want to help your cannabis business boom. Whether you're a grower, dispensary operator, or a newcomer to the field, your cannabis business needs Cannabis Finance Bootcamp. For information on upcoming events, visit CannabisFinanceBootcamp.com.
We must wage what I have called total war against public enemy number one.
I support a change in law.
to end federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
That marijuana, pot, grass, whatever you want to call it, is probably the most dangerous drug.
Some think there won't be room for them in jail. We'll make room.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it, and didn't inhale.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Radical Rant.
Today, we opened up the Cannabis Radio News with the story of the Federal Appeals Court, U.S. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, found that the convictions of Roger Christie and Sherrianne Christie for having 300 pot plants as part of a distribution ring upheld their convictions, said that yes, indeed, the government can bust people for growing weed even if they really believe God told them to. And it doesn't bring me joy to say that these people's convictions have been upheld. I'm not happy about it because I don't think anybody should be convicted, put in a cage, and run through the judicial system for growing houseplants. It's absurd. Makes no sense whatsoever. But I've said repeatedly and covered on this show so many times that this religious argument to try to get yourself a special get-out-of-jail-free card for marijuana is not going to work. What they talked about in the story is the government's ability to force a religious objector to comply with the law if doing so furthers, one, a compelling government interest, and two, there's no other way they could do this. There's no less restrictive way to accomplish the goal. So the way this works out, when the U.S. courts look at this idea of so-and-so says that ganja is a sacrament, the way they look at it is this. The government first has a compelling interest to stop drug use. Now, I don't believe it does. I think the tortured constitutional logic that figured out that the government has a right to tell us what plants we can put on our body is, like I said, tortured logic, but as it stands under the law, the government has a right to stop you from using certain drugs, has the compelling interest of public safety and regulating commerce. They can stop you from consuming drugs. So, if someone comes along who's a pot smoker and says, hey, God says I can smoke pot, that defeats the government's compelling interest of stopping people from smoking pot. Now, the other part, is there a less restrictive way to accomplish that goal? Could I only sort of stop people from smoking pot to accomplish the goal of stopping people from smoking pot? Could I? No, there's no less restrictive way. You're either stopping, you can't be a little bit pregnant or a little bit pot smoking. You're either a pot smoker or not, right? The government's compelling interest, stop people from smoking pot. There's not an easier way to do that but to ban all people from smoking pot. Giving people a religious exemption to smoke pot would defeat the government's interest because pot is so popular and being a religion is so easy that nobody, it would be hard to bust anybody. Anybody who got busted could just say, God told me to do it. And that would defeat the government's compelling interest. Now, this is the part where they say, oh, hold on. President Clinton signed something called the Religious Freedom Restoration Act that said that the government could allow these exemptions. And it's been found through court cases that certain religions, these nativist, Native American type religions and Brazilian religions and such, that these native religions that have had the use of hallucinogens for thousands and thousands of years could use these hallucinogens. Ayahuasca tea, peyote buttons can be used for religious purposes. So if they can have religious purposes to use these powerful hallucinogens, why can't Roger Christie and the THC ministry have cannabis to use as their sacrament when it's far less, you know, trippy than the hallucinogens we're talking about? Well, that's the other part of the problem. We go back to that compelling interest and less restrictive means. People don't want to trip generally. Most people don't want the what they have to go through with peyote or ayahuasca. It's not comfortable in some ways. There's not a big interest in people doing those drugs. So allowing some of these native religions to do those drugs doesn't really stop the federal government from stopping everyone else from doing those drugs. It's pretty easy to identify who's in those religions. Those religions just don't get made up all the time. There's no brand new, well, I can't say there's no, there probably are, but there's not usually brand new religions that have these ancient kind of, you know, peyote and ayahuasca rituals that they have. So it doesn't stop the government's compelling interest, and they allow them to have their sacrament. So what it really comes down to, unfortunately, for the people who believe that ganja is a sacrament, is your sacrament's too popular. Too many non-believers love your sacrament to stop them from faking their way into a religion to get away with breaking the law. Now, as I've described all this, do not mistake this for me saying that I agree with this line of reasoning. I do not in the least agree with this line of reasoning. To me, making this a religious argument is almost beside the point. Of course, maybe that's because I'm an atheist. But to me, what the First Amendment freedom of religion really means is freedom of thought. And the other amendments, the 4th, the 5th, the 6th, the 9th, a lot of these amendments combined together provide us the freedom of self, that we are sovereign over our own bodies. That's what the whole abortion debate is about. Are we sovereign over our own bodies? And the Supreme Court has decided, yes, we do have rights to things like birth control and abortion. So if my body, my choice means anything, then it's got to mean that when it comes to putting stuff in the body. What we eat, what we drink, and what we ingest for psychoactive purposes. If freedom of religion means anything, it means freedom of thought, freedom of belief, a freedom to identify with a certain creed or a certain set of morals and standards and such. And so preventing people from using a certain substance because of how it alters their perceptions seems to me to be a direct affront to that freedom of how we believe, how we think, how we choose to present ourselves. So it's not even a matter of arguing about this because you're a Rastafarian or a Coptic Christian or you formed your own church called the THC Ministry. That is all not well and good, but it's superfluous. It's superfluous to what our right actually is, that me, Radical Russ, atheist dude, who likes pot because he smokes it and it makes him high, that's all I need. That's all the justification constitutionally I believe that we need to smoke pot. It's my body. It's a plant that came out of the earth. There was no manufacture involved. Nothing involving commerce necessarily. It is possible for me to take a seed and plant it in ground I own, and water that falls from the sky and nutrients that exist in the soil can create this bud that I can smoke. There's no commerce in that whatsoever. So there's no commerce clause argument for stopping me from using that. And what this all boils down to is, damn it, free Roger Christie. I may not agree with the argument he's making. I mean, I agree with the argument he's making, but I'm just saying it's a superfluous argument. Yes, of course you have the religious right to use cannabis, because we all have the right to use cannabis. That's like saying, well, you know, tall Puerto Ricans have the right to vote. Well, yeah, of course they do. We all have the right to vote, right? So I that's all I got to say is free Roger Christie, because what's the point? What are we stopping here? But we're stopping people in Hawaii from smoking weed by keeping him locked up? Really? You better tell Woody Harrelson and Willie Nelson that. Well, folks, that's all the time we got. Time flies when you legalize. That's hour one. Coming up next, hour two, Toker Talk Radio, which, remember, coming soon, Toker Talk Radio will be available live, but as a podcast, it will only be available on RadicalRust.com. So we got some changes coming sometime later this summer. For everyone here at CannabisRadio.com, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. And until next time.
Take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.